Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you, as usual. We start with the good, and it's from the campaign spot. Jim picked this up from Ron Fournier over at National Journal, and they're kind of looking at what Hillary Clinton's campaign strategy might be. And as the Obama popularity levels head into the 30% range, it's becoming more and more clear that she's clearly not going to be running for a third Obama term in terms of her campaign strategy. So what's she going to do? And here was the consensus from Ron Fournier after talking with a bunch of Hillary friends. Pope Francis has reminded us of the power of small gestures. Without changing the Vatican's ideology one iota, he has transformed the way people think about the Catholic Church, one symbolic act at a time. And consider the parallels between your job and that of the Pope, an old man running an ancient institution marred by scandal and incompetence. You can be just as transformative. Actually, if you run for president, you must be. That's what a few of us think. Jim, I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of interesting comments about the comparison here, but when you're president, you actually change policy, so you can do all the symbolic acts you want, but the policies are pretty much going to be the same, and it's also going to be pretty hard for Hillary Clinton to pull off the role of outsider here.
People might be asking, why is this the good martini? The first part is that I actually think the first part of the assessment is correct, that it's very hard to imagine that by 2016, Americans are going to be thrilled with what they're getting out of Washington. I think there's a great deal of cynicism about the way the government operates. I think people are sick and tired of it. I think they see it as a bunch of petty game playing. I think they see crony capitalism as rampant, favor trading, and politicians blurring their self-interest and the nation's interest. It's really interesting, the comparison to Pope Francis. And I just want to, you know, I'll deviate from our main point here for a second. Pope Francis recently celebrated his birthday, and he got together with homeless people for his birthday. He could do anything, but he does this. I think that really strikes a lot of people right in their hearts because they see it as leading by example. Pope Francis, obviously he's a celebrity, he's man of the year, he runs one of the world's most powerful and influential organizations, and yet he's basically saying to all these people who are the lowest of the low, the homeless, people who are most downtrodden, and saying, look, I'm no better than you. I want to celebrate with you. I want to be with you on this special day. And it just kind of, I think it grabs people. It's not like, you know, Francis needs to do it for the PR or there's some sort of, you know, big benefit to him. He does this because it's a sign that every one of those folks, they're never going to forget that moment. You know, not only do they meet the Pope, but they actually, you know, spent time with him. You see him kissing people who are disfigured. I mean, just one gesture after another saying, look, I am not better than you. I am not superior to you. Don't put me up on a pedestal. I am just another creation of God. And it really kind of, you know, I think, really resonates with people. And it's the antithesis of everything they see coming out of Washington. So one, I don't think we've ever seen anything like that coming out of Hillary. But what's more is the idea that Hillary Clinton is going to be the person who's going to change Washington. I really am having a hard time thinking of someone who is less likely to change Washington. Maybe you could say an Obama third term. Maybe you could say George W. Bush. You know, Hillary Clinton, basically from January 20th, 1993, when Bill Clinton became president, the moment she arrived, she was one of the top five and maybe top two or three most influential people in the entire country. And that didn't really change much when she was Senate. That didn't really change much when she was Secretary of State. Because of her connection to Bill and all of the old Clinton network, she's always been a major power broker. She's always been at the top of the food chain. Washington is, if not built in her image, certainly is heavily shaped by her. And there's never been any indication that she's got a real problem with it. As I quoted on Campaign Spot, you can go down the list of all kinds of examples of this. But I think the Clinton Foundation allegations of influence peddling and Huma Abedin's special deal in which she gets to work for the State Department and be a consultant for outside clients at the same time. Is really good examples of this. So the idea that Hillary Clinton will run and win in 2016 as this outsider, as this grand crusading populist who's going to change Washington, strikes me as perhaps the single most implausible scenario there. So it's good news for us that what the country is going to be in a mood to have doesn't match her. And it also is good for us that she may attempt to run as something she clearly isn't. And I think the phoniness would be a major, major impediment to any bid she makes.
On to martini number two now. And this is a story that is everywhere today. It kind of blew up yesterday. Phil Robertson, a.k.a. Uncle Phil from Duck Dynasty, the most popular show, I believe, on basic cable. He did an interview with GQ, and they asked him about repentance and God and what he finds sinful. And he started talking about homosexuality, and he said a number of things, including this: don't be deceived, neither the adulterers, the idolaters, the male prostitutes, the homosexual offenders, the greedy, the drunkards, the slanderers, the swindlers, they won't inherit the kingdom of God. Don't deceive yourself, it's not right. Folks like GLAAD and the Human Rights Campaign talking about how his comments were hateful and nothing to do with how Christians really think. Jim, I should point out that the quote I read before is from the Bible, so apparently that's hateful too.
Longtime readers will know I'm not the most adamant culture warrior or someone who really, you know, delves into the, you know, controversy over gay issues. But this really feels a lot like the Chick-fil-A controversy when, you know, certain mayors were saying we didn't want their restaurants in our cities because of the viewpoints of the owner. I've seen a couple episodes of this. These guys are who they are. Each show ends with a prayer. I'm surprised that people are surprised that he has this viewpoint. And what he's doing there is basically paraphrasing something that's in Corinthians. It's a freedom of speech. You can say you think it's a bunch of nonsense, but he's got the same freedom of speech to say it. And for A&E to decree that, well, look, if you say this, if you hold this viewpoint, you can't be on our network, is kind of chilling. And it's one of those things where does A&E have the legal right to dismiss them? Sure. By the way, it's worth noting that I guess they finished taping the most recent season, so that's all going to air because, you know, A&E loves the sweet money it brings in from it'll be airing with a golden calf, I believe. But A&E wants to demonstrate that they disapprove of this because, you know, a good chunk of gay Hollywood folks are offended, and hey, you know, they're free to be offended by it. They don't have to like it, but it's a very short step from shame on you, Duck Dynasty guy, for saying this, to you can't be on television if you hold this viewpoint. And I think that this is an effort to decree that certain teachings in the Bible are not acceptable for public discussion. A&E could have very well finessed this and said, you know, we really disagree with what Phil Robertson said. We embrace the gay community. We embrace our gay viewers. We never want anyone to feel that we don't, you know, accept them. But implying that he's off the show until further notice, it strikes a note of absolute intolerance for a viewpoint that most would say is, you know, straight from the source of their deepest religious beliefs, you know, the Bible. And oh, by the way, you'll find the same thing in the Quran. And oh, by the way, you'll find the same thing in the Old Testament of in the Torah and in a whole bunch of other religious texts. So if we're going to decree that off limits and unacceptable to be expressed on television, I think you're going to end up having, you know, basically saying that religion does not belong on television. I think that's never been the case in this country. Also, with note, this was never mentioned in the show. This was an interview with GQ. And basically the rule is that if you say something sufficiently controversial in a magazine interview or that enough people in Hollywood don't like, they'll take you off the show. Now, this may eventually lead to Duck Dynasty leaving A&E, and maybe that's the best solution here because I can think of there probably a whole bunch of networks who'd be thrilled to have Duck Dynasty and its 11 million viewers jumping over and watching their channel. So just kind of very surprising that A&E felt the need to go to really drop the hammer on him for expressing a viewpoint that is straight out of the Bible, something that, you know, millions upon millions of Americans believe is the centerpiece of their worldview. And the idea that this is what's too controversial for the network of The Sopranos and Bates Motel and all kinds of, you know, lurid, violent, and horrific programming is kind of astounding. There are times when America's Christians can overplay the victim card and get kind of insufferable in this, but I think this is one where it really does seem like there's an effort to define certain portions of the Bible as unacceptable for public discourse.
Bobby Jindal, the governor, sticking up for his constituent down there, saying, Miley Cyrus does her stuff, gets a laugh. Phil Robertson tells you what he believes, and he gets kicked off his show.
It's kind of galling and appalling and shocking and, you know, also perhaps very revealing about the state of our society today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of which, let's move on to martini number three and the ethical quandaries of a panel on MSNBC. This all started when Slate's Matt Iglesias decided to reveal the fact that he basically lies to Amazon.com by claiming that he is a parent, because by saying you have a child, you can get, I believe, a 20% discount in one of their programs. And so then the MSNBC panel decided to discuss whether or not this was ethical for the customers to lie to Amazon to get a better discount. Here's Josh Barrow. He is a political editor at Business Insider.
Amazon thinks, you know, parents scour the coupon pages more closely. They're more price sensitive. So we'll have a discount program that's aimed at them. I don't think consumers have any obligation to help businesses engage in price discrimination.
Later on, towards the end of the conversation, Crystal Ball is apparently the only one with a conscience here. So she talks first, and then Barrow is back in there, as well as the omnipresent Touré.
I still say, even if it is a corporation that you're lying to, it's still a lie.
Yeah, with Crystal, maybe it's a gender thing. Maybe
it's
women
a noble lie.
A lie is told in the forest, and there's no one around to hear it.
That's right. It's still a lie.
If a lie is told to a corporation, it's not really a lie.
If you're staying at a hotel and they have a weekend deal called the Romance Package, is it okay to do that on a business trip? I'd say yes. You can lie to them about
whether
at the hotel.
There you go, Josh.
Yeah.
I'm sure their parents are proud today, Jim.
Yeah, I'm kind of struck by this the conversation. I'm not that surprised that Matt Iglesias says something astonishingly stupid. But it really says something about him, because he recently bought this like $1 million townhouse in D.C. So does he really need that 20% discount from Amazon that badly that he's going to invent a fake child and such? I mean, like, Amazon wants to do this because, one, they're targeting parents. Like, they want to attract this particular market. They want to be seen as, you know, hey, you're going through a challenging, stressful time in your life where, money's going to be tight, got to buy a lot of new things, and here we are helping you out. And it says something that, non-parent Matt Iglesias, non-parent Josh Barrow, I don't know if, does Touré have a child? I don't believe he does.
I don't know.
All these guys seem to see some sort of injustice there, that there's something wrong there, that maybe Amazon might be giving them something that they can't. Two of the three being white males, I notice. Somehow they feel that there's this need to get something, a specific benefit targeted to women. I would note that you choke on the irony here. At least one lawyer has asked that technically Matt Iglesias is committing wire fraud by communicating things that are not true in a purchasing contract with Amazon. I don't know if anyone really wants to investigate that or press charges or such. But what's really kind of fascinating is the shamelessness. If you're going to try to con a company out of a 20% discount, don't go on television and then announce to the world that you're trying to con the company out of a 20% discount. Like I said, first of all, I think Amazon pointed out that like you get the 20% discount on items like diapers. So I don't know what Matt Iglesias is doing with diapers right now. I don't know what any of these guys are doing with any of the products. We look across the partisan divide and we see people who we wish we could have a civil, pleasant, respectful conversation with. And here they are, Touré specifically uses the phrase noble lie. They're basically saying it is okay to lie to get what you want and to get money, or to save money because they're a corporation and they're bad. And, I salute Crystal Ball for having the sense to realize, hey, wait a minute. No, it's not okay. Lying is a bad thing, and it doesn't really matter if you don't like the person you're speaking to or something like that. You can argue about whether this is worth Amazon does. Amazon said they pretty much are on the honor system and stuff, and they kind of think that most of their people who are taking this discount are genuinely parents. But I think it says something that amongst these guys, that Amazon offering moms a discount bothers them so that they feel the need to lie in order to get their share. I think it says something about the way they see the world. I think it says something a little bit about what's in their hearts and their viewpoint. They said at one point some businesses will have a veterans discount or a military discount, and they thought that would be wrong. The other intriguing thing is I'd like to fast forward 10 years or something and see if at some point Matt Iglesias or Josh Barrow become parents, whether they have a different perspective. Maybe this is something you just need to experience and realize what a great challenge it is in both terms of stress psychologically, financially and every other way. That parenthood is stressful, and a company that comes out and gives you a little bit of assistance is much appreciated. And that's just good business. That's just being, I think, a good person. But it's something that these, yokels on MSNBC, probably making more than you and I are, Greg, is something that they find unbearable and intolerable.
A noble lie is someone in 1940s Europe saying, no, I'm not harboring any Jews in my house. I want to save an extra 5% on my Amazon bill. Jim, amazing day as always. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.